Connor, welcome back to We're Not All Like This, part of Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. Things you already know, but the listener may want to learn for the first time. I'm going to give you six words, and I want you to tell me the common factor that they all have with one another, okay?
Great. I'm
crabs.
Ready.
All right, here we go. Crabs, drizzlers, scampi, frogs, anchovies, nutcrackers.
You know, you really had me go in one direction. And then you threw nutcrackers in there, Ryan.
Do you have a guess you want to venture?
They all have vowels in them. I don't know,
okay,
Ryan.
Okay, you know
I
what?
Can't.
Technically, that's true. Technically, congratulations, everybody. No. These were all names submitted by the public when Seattle was getting its expansion NFL franchise. They landed on Seahawks, but this is a thing that, you know, you are a fan of college football history, as am I, and I think we're used to, like, oh, there's periods where, you know, alternate names were considered or the public came up with, you know, name that didn't quite really stick. I appreciate that the people of Seattle awarded an NFL team in the 70s were like scampi, frogs, nutcracker. Like, let's just, there was no sense of like, no, we should take this seriously. There was some real whimsy afoot in these submissions.
They really saved themselves in the future. Had they gone nutcracker or crabs, I think that really yeah, could have been a tough pivot.
I think frogs could have worked in its own way.
Seattle Frogs. There's no flow to that name either. No. Just Seattle Frogs.
No, yeah. Seattle Seahawks does have like a nice cadence to it and all of that. We're not going to do this episode about alternate names for the Seattle Seahawks because we have three wonderful guests on to talk about the experience of being a Seahawks fan, which I think is in some ways, I don't know, I go back and forth on this. I think there are a lot of teams that sort of give you the college experience despite being in the NFL. We previously did an episode about the Buffalo Bills. I think they are extremely college football. I don't know that being a Seahawks fan is necessarily a super college football experience, but they play a lot of college football-y games, if you sort of catch my drift.
They also were guided by one of the more college football-y guys to have ever existed.
Yes.
For a long time.
Yes.
And Marshawn Lynch, who I believe to be one of the more college football players of all time as well.
100%. Yeah, like a lot of sort of the, that whole era of Seahawks was, it felt very college in a lot of ways, like sort of the personalities behind it, Pete Carroll's approach to everything, the idea that like, every game was going to come down to like, well, let's see who makes the worst choice in the last 3 minutes of the game. That felt very college football in a lot of ways too.
That and the Jim Harbaugh handshake, of course, also the most college football, other college football of all college football guys. The post game handshake between just Carroll and Harbaugh's whole deal together too burns in my brain.
I'm so happy that we get to have it back. It's so nice.
It's great.
They're back together again where they belong, prowling the sidelines, being just impeccable weirdos at all times.
Yes. Yes. The more we can inject the world with the college football DNA, the better.
That's right. That said, Seattle Seahawks are not a college football team, but boy, Homefield has something this summer, this fall rather, rolling out for, feels like basically every college football program, college team, etc. Is there anything that you are particularly excited about as we get into can't miss kickoff season? Like, is there one thing that you're like, oh, this is like some really cool stuff that I, Connor, long ago humble college football fan, I'm really geeked about this?
Well, we just did the boxes about a week and a half ago as we record this, which were great. Had a lot of fun rolling those out. But we have this fall, I'll actually tease, you know, beyond what we're doing, we're traveling the country again for our events on the Can't Miss Kickoff Tour presented by Modelo.
That's right.
But beyond that, we have something coming. I'm trying to be a little vague here to keep the audience, you know, on the hook.
Yeah.
In a week or so, we have bunch of items rolling out that you've seen already on our schedule. Tri-Stripe Crew Neck, Puffing Truckers, refreshes for a bunch of schools, including the Washington Huskies there in Seattle.
That's right.
But this November, we have a garment coming out that we've never launched before that was basically made for the city of Seattle. Oh. It's not quite waterproof. It is water resistant.
Okay.
I'll tell you that much.
All right. So it's
and
not...
I'm very excited for it to come out.
All right. So home field wetsuit, not on the list.
Yeah. And home field wetsuit, not on it. I will say I went to the city of Seattle for the first time last fall and had a wonderful time. It did not rain once, which of course I was told that I was the luckiest son of a gun to go there when it didn't rain. Went to Rainier. It was wonderful. But I got to experience one of the great football traditions in all of sports, which is sailgating. And the people of Seattle were lovely. So I need to make my way back to Seattle as I had a great time. That has nothing to do with the Seahawks, but it does with your city.
I mean,
so,
it
great
does.
City. It's, 10 out of 10.
I feel it's related. Like, I think I've never been, but Seattle strikes me as like a cozy city in a lot of ways.
Yes, very cozy. I did have a Seattle hot dog, Seattle style hot dog. Have you heard of this?
No. I had
they
no
put
idea
cream cheese.
Thing.
They put cream cheese on the hot dog, Ryan. And I'm sure there's some Seattle people who are like, oh, is that just a tourist thing? I don't know. I was told by native Seattle folk that that was a real thing. And so I was served a Seattle hot dog.
And what's your review of this Seattle hot dog?
I think as a novelty, great. I think if I had to have that every time I had a hot dog, which I don't think is the case. Seattle people, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I couldn't do it. Could not do it. But, you know, it was a fun little curveball.
Okay. Just so we are for the record, we are not claiming that the Seattle hot dog is compulsory. We still live in a world where you can go to Seattle and order a hot dog in your own style of or choosing, not
I think it would be more acceptable to order a hot dog in Seattle without cream cheese than it would be to go to Chicago and order a hot dog with ketchup. I'll put it at that.
Yeah, but the Bears haven't done shit in the playoffs that I can remember. And the Seahawks went to 2 Super Bowls
no way.
And won one of them. So, yeah, sorry about that. Didn't mean to.
This is the first time hearing of this.
Yeah, I don't know why I brought up the Bears in this podcast. We're not here to talk about the Bears. We're here to talk about the Seattle Seahawks, and we're going to do that right now.
Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord.
I'm Mina Kimes. I'm an NFL analyst at ESPN and am also a lifelong Seahawks fan.
My name is Natalie Weiner. I am a born and raised Seattleite and Seahawks fan by default, though I have not lived in Seattle for some time now. I now live in Dallas, and I am a writer covering music and a little bit of sports still here and there. I co-founded a newsletter mostly about country music, with another writer named Marissa Moss. It's called Don't Rock the Inbox. And so we really try to run the gamut of everything you could possibly think of as far as country, Americana, folk, whatever, you know, no rules, just right, as it were.
I'm Jackson Bevins, host of the Cigar Thoughts podcast. I've been a Seahawks fan actually literally since the day I was born. I was born on opening day of 1983. My parents didn't own a television, but the hospital room that my mom gave birth to me in did. And so they stayed in the hospital like the extra day so that I could watch my first Seahawks game. So yeah, I was truly born into it.
I have to ask, what was the result of that game?
They won.
Okay. Good sign. Good sign.
They won. Yeah. 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 It was downhill from there for a while, but you know, we got back up about 10 years ago.
That's right. All right. I want to start by quoting a Kevin Clark tweet from 2019. It's very short and very sweet, and it reads as follows.
I know which one it is.
I'm sure you do. It says, the Seahawks have literally never played in a normal game.
Yeah.
First question for you about this tweet. Does that feel accurate to you? Does that like ring true to you as a Seahawks fan?
Yeah, certainly during the Pete Carroll era. I mean, it was just such a dynamic time. And he had this strange obsession with close games, and he was like a master manifester. I mean, it's just hard to have the career with as much success over such a long period of time that Pete Carroll had without having some ability to do that. And his whole thing, it drove me crazy. I love Pete Carroll. His book is like, you know, foundational in my growth as a person, as a man, as a husband, as a football fan, all that stuff. I love him. He had one saying that drove me crazy, and he'd always say after a close win, can you win the game in the first quarter? Whole team yells no. Can you win the game second quarter? No. And then he goes, can you win the game in the fourth quarter? And I went, yeah. And it's great when you win and super frustrating when you're up by 14 in the third quarter and you're just like, damn it, man, just put them away. But it was it was so exciting, such high variance football. The quarterback, of course, peak Russell Wilson, had his deficiencies, but his superpower was these crazy high variance plays. And they just, no matter where the two teams started a game, they always ended up right here. And in a sport as dynamic as NFL football, which I think is honestly like one of the craziest forms of entertainment out there, when you get into a close game where it's coming down to a play or a possession, wild things can happen, and they just seem to follow Seattle for like 10 years.
I mean, definitely. That's why it endures, right? You know, there's truth there. And I think, like, I mean, okay, I guess probably the Seahawks have played a normal game. They've played a lot of games. But there is a sort of, maybe it's just the way that Seahawks fans digest the game. You know, our interaction with all of the chaos that comes with football. You know, I mean, it's a chaotic sport. It's unpredictable. That's why we like watching it, right? We maybe are like too dramatic or something, so it feels even more abnormal than it would otherwise. But I mean, I always, with that tweet, I mean, there's like a million examples, obviously. But I just always think of the Cardinals game that ended in a tie. And I don't remember what year it was, but it was like, well, I don't know, 2016, 2017, something, when it was like in overtime and it's like tied like 6-6, I think, you know, and it's just like, that's like the end of the game. It's just like, what, truly just one of those things that will make you question, like, what am I doing with my life?
I think it was really accurate during the Russell Wilson era for some reason. Since then, certainly lately, you're not seeing as many weird finishes. And I think I looked this up, actually, Ryan, because I wanted to see, I think like a disproportionate amount of Seahawks games went to overtime during the Russell Wilson period in Seattle, which sort of factors into this. But I like, every fan base thinks their team plays weird games. Mm-hmm. But I will argue that when Russell Wilson was quarterback, so, you know, from 2012 until a couple years ago, the Seahawks did play weirder games the most.
It also feels like it wasn't just that Seahawks games got close. They frequently like ended in weird ways, or like there's a number of sort of like notable mm-hmm. endings to NFL games. And it's like, oh, there the Seahawks are. Like, are they some sort of weird magnet for, hey, here's a rule you forgot about, or something like that?
I don't know when Kevin tweeted that, but, you know, it was very, the Fail Mary game, infamously, against the Packers, where Golden Tate simultaneously came up with the football, and the Seahawks won, and it was the replacement refs. That feels to me like it was maybe the start of it, and that was very weird. But again, as far as the why of it, I truly don't know. The Seahawks had a ton of scoregamis during mm-hmm. this era as well, which is weird. And there's really no explanation for it.
Did you as a Seahawks fan like enjoy this sort of like the emotional ringer that the team put you through at this time? Or was there a part of you that was like, I would love to just like win or lose a normal game, so to speak?
You know what was funny? The Super Bowl that the Seahawks won, 48, was very boring for most of the world, but for Seahawks fans, it was not only like incredibly fun, because for those who have forgotten, they dominated from the jump against Denver. It was just like so strangely relaxing, and I remember vividly watching that and like having a beer in the third quarter after Percy Harvin had a return for a touchdown, thinking like, this would be great if every game was like this. I love this because close games are exciting and fun when you don't have a rooting interest, but when you do, they take years off your life.
I mean, there's a good like sequel to the tweet. Actually, I'm going to find it because it's on Blue Sky, you know, because Seahawks fans are woke and have mostly made the move over. I mean, not all, hashtag not all Seahawks fans. I can't speak for everyone, but a quorum. This one's from Josh Cashman, better known as Cable Thanos. They're going to do a study on Seahawks fans in 40 years and find it has a similar effect that smoking or eating processed food does to our longevity and health. And they'll look back at this day as one of the main causes. That's from December 1st, 2024. So, you know, it persists even post Kevin Clark tweet. And I think because there is this community of posters, you know, I think we do cherish in some sick way the idiosyncrasies. And I think I would be remiss also as I was sort of reflecting, like, what does Seahawks fandom mean right now prior to this podcast? The crossover with Mariners fandom is crucial because if there's anything sicker than Seahawks fandom, it's Mariners fandom, you know? and a lot of people, you know, it's of course, like, people are fans of both. You know, if you're from Seattle, you know, these are sort of the two big pro teams that have been around for a long time, RIP to the Sonics, etc. But yeah, it's like the same thing where it's just like, how do they do this? You know, like, we're just kind of always trying to answer, like, how does this happen? How did this game go this way? I mean, this past week, another guy, Nathan Bishop, who has a really good Mariners newsletter, he posted, like, some of you aren't prepared for another Mariners historic collapse in the shows.
Yeah, you know, my producer, Mike Barwin, or no, this is actually Danny Kelly. Mike Barwin's got a funny tweet about this, too. It's the meme of this young woman in a restaurant. And she's crying by herself. Someone's taking a video of her, and she's just, like, shoveling food into her mouth. And it's like Seahawks fans was over the girl and it's like another close win is what they were eating. And you're like miserable about it. Right. And Danny Kelly had mutual friend and icon. Danny Kelly had tweet that said, you know, familiar feeling after a Seahawks win, misery. And it was just like, it doesn't need to be this hard. But that being said, you get one game a week for less than half of the year. Nah, losing big sucks. You know, what led to me doing this podcast is I actually wrote post-game recaps called Cigar Thoughts, which I'd always smoke a cigar after the game and kind of formulate my thoughts, write it out. And the number of times that I had to delete 2,500 words because the last 5 minutes of the game threw all of it out was so maddening, but also very, very fun.
Do you know what makes Phantom Island and We're Not All Like This possible? Well, microphones, yes, and internet and electricity, but also our paid subscribers who help support all of our work and get to listen to this episode and everything else we publish in its entirety. If you would like to join that esteemed group, head on over to phantomisland.show and sign up today. Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber and presented by Homefield. Our theme music by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard comes from the song Phantom Island from their album of the same name. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.